Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Waterford, Michigan, and attended Michigan State University while becoming an All-American in football and baseball, and later received an honorary doctorate in humanities. A first-round draft choice of the Detroit Tigers, he played 16 seasons as a right fielder. In 1984 and 1988, he hit two of the most famous home runs in World Series history. And since 2015, he's been battling Parkinson's disease. Affectionately known as Gibby, his name, Kirk Gibson. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Kirk Gibson. Gibby, welcome. A real honor to have you.
It's an honor to be here, and good to see you. We've run across each other at various places, Jack, and here we meet today, and we'll have a good time with some good conversation, and hopefully we can spread some positivity.
First question, how are you feeling, Gibby, and how are you doing?
I'm feeling great. I continue to push on. I'm a very active person. You know, sometimes you'll be around people that think that I need to take it easy, but it's just not in my DNA. And I saw a guy, he says, you know, you got to slow down. One of my friends, you got to slow down. I said, why? And he says, because you're going to do too much. And then I look at him and he's tapping his foot. You ever seen somebody tapping their foot? And I said, why don't you stop your foot like that? And he says, well, I can't. That's who I am. So, you know, we're all different. I like to be awake. I like to help people. I've had a wonderful life so far, and we'd look to spread the positivity in today's environment.
You grew up in Waterford. You're the youngest of three. Your mom and dad were both high school teachers. What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Structure and support. My mom and dad were very structured in our household. Three square meals a day. Everybody had to be there. When I went to elementary school, I ran to school, and I ran home at lunch, and I ran back, and did I forget to tell you that we did a little lesson, whatever season it was? We eat our lunch, and then if it was football season, we'd run out in the backyard, and my dad would teach me how to carry the football properly. If it was basketball season, I might have to shovel the snow so we could shoot a couple hoops, or if it was baseball season, maybe we were in the middle of building a pitcher's mound in the backyard. But we always set goals. We set projects. We did it together as a family. And, you know, when we started things, we finished things. And then the support part, they were just everywhere for me. Whenever I was competing, whenever I had anything to do, they were always there and they're always supportive. And they taught me to never be afraid to fail.
In 1975, you go to MSU on a football scholarship. After a couple of years, you start to play baseball there. And after your junior year in 78, the Tigers draft you in the first round with the 12th pick. A six-year deal, Gibby, for $200,000. That's $33,000 a year is what you signed for. You go to Class A in the summer in Lakeland, and the manager's name is Jim Leland. What'd you learn from Leland?
Well, Jim Leland, when I flew down to Fort Lauderdale it was Miami, for my first professional game, and that was with against the Baltimore Orioles affiliate A-Ball. It was a high A advance at the time. And so I fly in there, and I got out the plane. Then you could wait at the actual gate in the airport. And a man walks up to me, and it's Jim Leland, and he's walked up, and he stuck his arm out straight. He said, Kirk Gibson, Jim Leland. And he just turned around and said, let's go. We got over to his car. We got my bags, got over to his car, and it was very hot in there. You know, your car has been sitting in the garage, and we got in, and he started to pull out Jim Leland, rolled the windows down, and proceeded to undress me and say, hey, look at here. I don't care who you are. All-American baby. I don't give a, you know what. Number one pick. I don't care. Bonus baby. I don't care. My job is to get you to the big leagues as fast as I can get you there. You'll be with me every morning at 8 a.m. on the field for a personal workout, and then again at 2 o'clock with the team. And my job, I'm not going to take anything. I'm going to expect full effort out of you in the morning session, in the afternoon session, and then at night in the game. And I looked at him and I said, bring it on. And boy, did he bring it on, and boy, did I bring it on. It was just him and I every day. We did the double duties. And one day we got to AAA. The following year, I only did a half a year of that. And he used to throw me batting practice. And he said, okay, that's enough. I said, enough? I go, bring it on. Let's go. He says, oh, you want to hit some more? I said, yeah, let's go. What are we quitting for? So I threw him to exhaustion. Well, we went out there the next day, and when I got to the field, he had a pitching machine standing on the mound with Billy Muffet, our pitching coach. And he had two shopping carts of baseballs. And he says, bring it on. Here we go. And he just started feeding balls into that pitching machine. And he got me the second day. But, you know, it's very fortunate to have Jim Leland, who's going to be in the Hall of Fame as a manager. You know, my other managers were Sparky Anderson, Tommy Lasorda, just great, great mentors of mine, and guys that really hit me head on. They all stood up to me. And I was pretty aggressive, and I was like a wild stallion that needed to be broken. And those guys, they told me how it is. But you know what? I told them how it was, too. When I had something to say, we always had a relationship where I could say anything I'd want to say. I can remember Sparky saying, are you done? I'd say, yeah, and he just motioned me out the door. Or Leland, you know, he'd get into you. Like, he didn't care who you were. He wasn't afraid of anything. He'd fight a bulldozer. So, you know, I respected those guys. They said, we're going to teach you how to be a good ball player, but also be a professional. And because it's not worth winning if you don't do it the right way.
Sparky and Tommy Lasorda, your two major league managers, are two of the 22 managers in the Baseball Hall of Fame. We're talking to Kirk Gibson, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Kirk Gibson, who hit two of the most famous home runs in all of World Series history. Gibby, let's go back to September 8th, 1979. Tigers are playing the Yankees. It's your first game ever. Two outs. You're down 5-4, tying run on first, ninth inning. And Sparky puts you in as a pinch hitter against a guy named Goose Gossage. What happened?
Yeah, well, there's a lead up to that. Actually, I'd been called up from AAA after we'd won the AAA championship when I was playing with Evansville under Jim Leland, and he called me in and said, hey, you're going north. And I got in my car, packed up, and we were on our way up there. And I sat and watched a couple games. I wasn't playing, and we were playing the Yankees. You know, we had those small dugouts in Tiger Stadium, and the Yankees took the lead. And then as soon as they took the lead, Goose Gossage started warming up, you know, on the sideline there at Tiger Stadium. And I noticed some of my teammates leaving the dugout. You know, he was the most dominating closer in the game at the time. He threw legitimately over 100 miles an hour. And I said, what's with these guys? They're going to loosen up, or are they going to the bathroom? You know, they were trying to do is disappear because they didn't want Sparky to put him in. So I walked down by Sparky in the batting rack, and I took my bat, and I started clanking it around. And Sparky looked at me. He goes, what are you doing? What do you want? I said, I looked over at Gossage, and I nodded my head. I want him. Now, how crazy can a person be? Why would you want to face Goose Gossage? Well, the reason I wanted to face Goose Gossage is because I knew he was the best. And I could feel that inside of me wanted to not hit off him too, because people predetermined failure. But I said, hey, you got to see the best. And I told Sparky, I was clanking. So we got there to the bottom of the ninth inning. And I can't remember who got on base, but he says, hey, big boy, you want him? You got him. So I went up there and people, you know, there's a lot said about I was the next Mickey Mantle. I was going to be the savior of the Tigers. There's a lot of buildup after coming out of Michigan State. And sure enough, I said, yeah, I want him. And I went up there, got a guy on base, and I got in the first pitch. He threw about 102 miles an hour, and I swung right through it, maybe a little foul tip. Got back in the box. He was on his way again. Strike two, swung through that. Got through it again. Strike three, I took it, and I could remember hearing the ball. I heard it hiss as it went by. The whole at-bat took about 20 seconds, I swear. It didn't take very long. And I was disappointed, but, you know, I felt really good about myself because I knew I put myself up there against the best. And I remember looking out at him saying, well, there'll be another time. And there were many times throughout our big league careers, maybe 15 or so. I think I maybe been 1 for 15 off him with about 9 or 10 strikeouts. And every time he'd get me, you know, he just threw so hard and I'd swing harder and he had that high fastball and it was just so dominating. But I said, I'll have my day. I never gave up the hope. I never gave up the visualization that I'd get him when it counted. So when we got there to that World Series, it was time for payback, and that did happen. And that was very rewarding that, you know, you stick with those positive thoughts. And like I say, you don't worry about the negative, the losses, the failures, because everybody deserves a chance to fail. It's what you do after you fail. And my career was kind of defined by those moments.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Sparky?
How to be a professional. Here I was a guy that went to Michigan State to play football, where basically they're telling you to go out and dominate the guy across from you, try and hurt him, trying to get him to submit. So you walk in, you put your shoulder pads on, you prepare, you loosen up, you do your sprints, then you start banging. And you know, I love contact and I love to hit people. And, you know, it puts you in a very intense mode. But then you're done with practice. You walk in, you take your pads off, you take a shower, and you walk out into society again. And it was always hard for me to put that switch, you know, to turn that switch off. I kind of seemed to take that volatile, intense person that I was on the field, off the field, and maybe didn't treat people as proudly as I'd like to admit to these days, although it was part of the growing process. And, you know, I was just really out of control. I was I worked so fast. I hit so hard. And it was all because I wanted to win my job to help my team win. But Sparky would bring me in, he taught me how to be a professional, how to treat people, how to understand, you know, there's media to deal with, there are fans to deal with, and what my responsibility. And he told me one day, hey, where's Babe Ruth? I said, well, what are you talking? Babe Ruth passed away, Sparky. He said, right, he's in the ground. The game went on. When I leave the game, it'll go on. When you leave the game, it'll go on. When you got no fans, you got no game. So you start right there, young man. And those lessons I preach today, it's ingrained in me. And, you know, there's some pushback nowadays because you're talking about the late 70s, early 80s when he is pushing these principles into me. And we had some battles along the way, trust me, where one day he told me, you're going to do it this way. I'm going to bring you to your knees, and if not, you can go sit in your mama's lap and watch the game next year. He did not mince words when we got to that point in our relationship.
Okay, 1984, the magical season. You start 35-5. Let's go to the World Series. It's game 5, 8th inning. Goose Gossage again, okay, decides to pitch to you with 2 men on and a base open. And Sparky from the dugout screaming, he wants to pitch to you, big boy. What happened, Gibby?
Well, Sparky initially kind of held up 4 fingers because it would have been smart for him to walk me. He would have loaded the bases, and they only had 1 out, and he was considering having the double play, although I'd be a hard guy to double up. And Dick Williams, his Goose Gossage's manager, held up the 4 fingers. And he just looked at him. I knew it was going on. I knew he wanted to pitch to me because he owned me, because he did strike me out all those times. And so I'm standing in the batter's box. You know, part of you wants wants him to walk you, but you know, the Kirk Gibson said, "No, this is time. This is what we've been talking about. This is what you prepared for. He's gotten you all these times, but we're in a World Series now. You're going to put him away." And so while his manager's out there talking to him on the mound, I'm looking at Sparky and I'm flashing my hands, $5, $10, $10. I'm looking out at the right field seats and I'm telling him $10. I'm going to take him up there. And all I'm doing there is visualizing and giving a positive affirmation to myself that I had said many times, I love pressure situations because I perform better under these circumstances. And not only did could I see it, I could feel it. I could feel what it was going to be like to run around the bases. I stepped in there. First pitch was the ball. Second pitch, see you later, sayonara, upper deck. And at that point, we knew the World Series was over. I'd finally gotten Gossage, and my teammates filled in the blanks, and we got the job done.
We're talking to Kirk Gibson, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Priscilla. We're with Kirk Gibson in 1988. He signs with the LA Dodgers. He went on to win the National League MVP that year. What's the biggest thing you learned from Tommy Lasorda, one who loved to eat?
Yes, he did. You know, when I went to college, what I learned, the biggest thing was, you know, I'm from Waterford, Michigan, and you know, we're a community, it's pretty much rural at the time, right on the edge of kind of society and then the woods, which I always liked. And when I went to college, I remember meeting people from California, Warren, Ohio, you know, Texas. They were from all over. I think we kind of grow up sometimes and we think that everybody does it the way you do it in Waterford, Michigan, but that's not the case. There's so many different personalities and cultures and nationalities. I mean, it's awesome. And it's the same for managers, too. I had Leland. He was his own man and his own manager. I had Sparky, who was very serious. He was very no-nonsense. When we did drills, he was really paid attention to detail. When you screwed it up, you didn't go out there and screw things up and laugh about it with Sparky. And when I went to Tommy, it was a totally different environment. I went to the Dodgers, reported for spring training. You have these little meetings before spring training. We had our meetings and, you know, they had trunks in the locker room and everybody's in there. You're all jammed in there. It was kind of like a comedy show. And there was a lot of laughing and a lot of joke telling. They had clowns jumping out of the, you know, they did little skits in there and stuff. And that was way different than Sparky. And I thought, man, these guys are screwing around a lot. And they had finished in fourth or fifth place a couple years in a row, and I was very, very uncomfortable with it. And we'd go out and we'd practice kind of sloppy, you know, just very loose. We'd come in and Tommy, you know, usually have a meeting and Tommy'd yell, "Eating, eating." He had eatings, not meetings. And so we'd go in his office and he had the best. He always had great Italian food. You can imagine that. No matter what city we went to, he had the best Italian food in the city, and he brought it in, and they catered in. You know, it was just very, very loose, and it was cool. We were getting closer, but I was uncomfortable with what was going on the field. And, you know, we did have an incident that came up there where they put eye black in my hat, and I just couldn't take it anymore because we were doing bunt plays, and Pedro Guerrero, our third baseman, picked up the ball and threw it in right field, and everybody started laughing. I'm like, that's not funny. You know, we're not even playing against anybody here, and we can't execute that. And I kind of had it, and I was warming up for our first spring training game, and the pitcher put some eye black in my hat. So when I took it off after my sweat, I had black all over, you know, the eye black, that stuff they put under your eyes. It was all over me, and I wiped it with my arm. It was all over my arms, and I could see the people in the stands laughing at me. So I'd had enough, and I ran off the field, and I told Tommy, "You go get that SOB who put this in my hat. I've had enough. you guys screw around too much. I'm going to make a statement right here and right now. And I ran in and to the clubhouse. I was sitting there and I was really, really worked up about this. And here comes Tommy. He goes, oh, you know, they're just trying to make you feel welcome. They just want to have fun. Winning is fun, I said. Not screwing around, wasting our time during the day. So I said, you tell me who did that. We're gonna have a little session right here. We're going to make an example of this young man. He said he wouldn't do it. So I took off. So I was in the lineup. I took off the lineup. I didn't play because I was going to make a statement. And the next day at 5:30 in the morning, my phone rang and it was Tommy Lasorda. And he sat down and he started to tell me that they were just trying to make me feel welcome. And they had a plan that, you know, they knew I was intense. They're trying to loosen me up a little bit. And he said, you know, the media, they're asking me what happened. And, you know, we told you it was we'd like to tell them that it was a family thing that we gave you, you know, we excused you from and everything's fine. You'll be back today. He talked to me for about 20 minutes. Then I never answered him. I just sat there in silence. He says, well, what do you think? Because he said, you know, we just want to tell him you had a personal thing with the family and everything's good. You're ready to go. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. He goes, oh, come on. I said, no, we're going to tell him the truth. We have our team meeting today. Before we hit the field, I'm going to speak. And he says, oh, I don't think that's good. I said, hey, Tommy, it's non-negotiable. You know, I came here under these circumstances, the way we're going, I can see it. It's not good. We need to push ourselves. We need to apply ourselves. Not all the time, but some of the time. And I just want people to understand who I am and why I came here. So sure enough, he acquiesced. I said, and send the pitcher who did it to me. And it was Jesse Orozco. He came over to me and he had his shaking hand. He goes, hey, buddy. I said, I knew it was a pitcher. You guys get bored in spring training. And then we had the meeting and I just spoke to the guys about the points we've been talking about. And I said, you don't know it yet, but I'm going to be one of the best teammates you've ever had. I'll stick up for you. We got to come together as a team. We got to apply ourselves in the time that we have together. And that day we went out, we had a really good session. And the day after that, it was good. And after that, it was good. And Tommy just kept getting the eatings. And we got closer and closer during the season. He was a different type of motivator. Like if he saw something that somebody said, he's one of those guys that pasted it on the lockers. You know, he'd say, hey, Gibb, what are you doing after the game? And I say, well, I'm going to go out and get something to eat. He goes, I'll have a limo there for you. And I got a great place. It'll take you there and you can eat. Get a couple of your buddies. He was always working your personality, trying to get in, trying to let you know that he cared about you. And, you know, eventually we came to grips with who I was, who he was, what he had to offer, what I had to offer, and what we together we could do with this team. And, you know, the rest is history. We won it all.
All right, you did win it all. Let's go to 1988 World Series, Dodgers against Athletics. Game one, ninth inning. You're down 4-3, one man on, two outs. You can't play because of a left hamstring injury. And here's Vin Scully telling the fans how you come out of the dugout.
And look who's coming up. All year long, they look to him to light the fire. And all year long, he answered the demands until he was physically unable to start tonight with two bad legs, the bad left hamstring and the swollen right knee. And with two out, you talk about a roll of the dice. This is it. If he hits the ball on the ground, I would imagine he would be running 50% to first base. So the Dodgers trying to catch lightning right now.
That was Vin Scully setting it up for us. Gibby, Dennis Eckersley, Hall of Fame closer, on the mound. What happened?
Isn't your show called Anything Is Possible?
Yes, sir.
And that's really, I had two injuries, left hamstring, right knee. I was in bad shape. I always thought I could handle just about anything, but I got up that day and, I mean, I was hurting. Got a couple injections before the game and didn't go out for introductions or the anthem. Sat in there and got treatment and just iced my knee on and off all game. Watched it. We were down 4-0, 4-1, 4-2, 4-3. And Vince Scully kept saying during the game, no Kirk Gibson. He kept panning the dugout. No Kirk Gibson. He will not be playing today. when we got to the ninth inning, I just, you could just see what was happening. We had Dave Anderson left on our bench, and we had Mike Davis left on our bench, and me. And I just started looking, and I thought, eighth hitter Davis, ninth hitter Gibson. And even though I was severely hurt, you know, I was just one of those moments that I lived for, pressure situations, performed my best under that, and they'd counted on me all year. And sure enough, I just sat there, and when we got to the top of the ninth inning, when Oakland was up, I told one of the bat boys, and Oral Hershiser was sitting there with me, I just said, get the batting tee set up. I went in and put the minimum uniform requirements on, got over to the batting tee, started hitting because I'd just taken the ice off both knees. And, you know, it's, my personality is you're either in or you're out. You're not in and you're hurt. You're not in with stipulations. You're in. It's Gibson against Eckersley no matter what. And I knew Eckersley didn't care. He wasn't going to send me no gift card saying, oh, sorry, you're hurting, buddy, but I'm going to get you out. And so sure enough, I told Mitch Poole, our bat boy, after a couple of swings, I said, go get Tommy. And Tommy's like, Mitch, I'm managing the game. Leave me alone. And I could hear him saying, no, it's Gibby. And Tommy said, oh, and he came waddling up the runway there underneath. I said, Tommy, hit Davis eighth, I'll hit ninth. He said, oh, okay. And he started to run to the dugout. And he goes, oh, he stopped me. He said, you stay up here. I don't want Oakland to see you. I said, all right. So I took a couple more swings, and we got to the bottom of the ninth inning. And sure enough, here goes Davis. He's hitting. We got two outs, nobody on, two quick outs. And Mike Davis is up to the plate, and I'm sitting up there, and I'm supposed to stay up there. And finally, I just said, I got to go. I went down to the dugout and sat there. And I could hear Oral Hershiser. He moved to the bench. He's saying to Mike Socia, I think Gibby's going to hit. I'm just sitting there visualizing good things and the emotions of what I'm about to experience. I'm dreaming this in my mind. And sure enough, Mike Davis gets on. And I told myself when I walk out, the fans are going to go nuts. And I won't hurt. It's going to be you and I, Dennis. And sure enough, it happened. I got up there. They went nuts. Got in the box. Two quick strikes. And then I went into what I call my emergency stroke, where it's just I declare a personal emergency, me against you. You're not going to strike me out. I'm going to get on somehow. I'm going to pass the baton to the next guy if I have to. And sure enough, if I don't battle back, 1-2, 2-2, I hit a little number, 3-2. And at 3-2, I stepped out of the box when Dennis came set. And I remembered something a scout, Mel Didier, had told me. It was in our scouting report. He said, Patna, as sure as I'm standing here breathing, you're going to see a 3-2 backdoor slider if Eckersley gets in trouble. When he gets nervous and it gets in the big time, he's going to throw you that backdoor slider. So I stepped out. I said exactly what Mel Didier said to me. I stepped in.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone.
Man, did it go. I couldn't believe it. It was an ugly swing that went out. And the first thing I remember, I put my arm up in the air, and I thought, there you go, Mom and Dad. All the criticism I'd had over the years, and I just told them, hey, look, we'll do it the right way. We'll have our day. The first thing I thought about was my parents, and then just the fans, just taking it all in, and the teammates, the magical moment. And it's why you continue to believe in yourself, because anything can happen, and it did that day. And I don't try and figure out why. But and I'm very blessed to have experienced a moment like that.
That was Gibby describing the famous home run against Eckersley, Game 1, 88 World Series. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the toughest opponent he's ever faced in his life. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist, who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom. I'm Jack Mazzulla. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to Kirk Gibson, who's facing the toughest opponent he's ever faced in his life since 2015, Parkinson's disease. Gibby, please.
Well, it's very formidable, and I've had some great moments. And really back in 2007, looking back, Jack, I had started feeling some different things. Many times when you're an athlete, you experience a lot of orthopedic things, shoulders, knees, wrists, but I started to have some muscle things that, and some posture things that were going with me, and I started to develop a limp. And I was the manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks at the time, and I ended up having a neck surgery. They thought maybe it was, you know, my neck had some degenerative things going on in C6-7. I got that. I really didn't get rid of it. And I noticed, like, I'd be shaving with my right hand and my left hand would clutch up. I said, man, that's weird. I'd be on my mountain bike and I could feel my left arm. I started to notice everything was on the left side. Well, unfortunately, I ended up getting fired from the Diamondbacks, came home in 2015 and got rehired by Fox Sports Detroit to do the Tiger games on the TV. And I went down to spring training. And I just started to feel very anxious, too. I mean, I'm not an anxious guy. I mean, I love challenges. I love to do things. But I just felt a little bit off. And, you know, usually I just say, you know, you fight through it. I just believe everything will work out. You know, you find a way to get through it. Some days you have good telecasts. Some days you have bad telecasts. You know, we all feel better as human beings. Sometimes it just depends on your rest, on your if you traveled, if you've been drinking, if you're getting good sleep, et cetera. But we, opening day of 2015, we did the game and I really felt off. I got through it and we went to do our post game and we were setting it up. And at the time it was, I believe, Marion Pimba. He went into the post game segment and he passed off to Rod Allen, and, you know, we had a drop in there. He was going to do Cabrera, and, you know, and I was going to do somebody else. So we're sitting there, and, you know, you have this thing in your ear. It's called an IFB, and your producer can talk to you. And he's, well, Rod Allen's doing his segment. He kind of kiddingly said, hey, Gibby, man, smile. You look like you saw a ghost. And when they threw it to me, I said, I think I'm seeing a ghost. I mean, I had so much anxiety. So they threw it to me, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't talk. I took my IFB out, walked away, and said, you know, I can't do it. I'll explain later. I went home. I called a good friend of mine, the late Peter Secchia from Grand Rapids. I told him what was going on, and he set me up with Dr. Giovannucci over there. I went over there the next day, and they diagnosed me initially with Parkinson's disease, but they wanted me to go in and see a movement specialist, a neurologist and a movement specialist. And they did all the tests over the next 2 days. And next thing you knew, it was confirmed that I had Parkinson's disease. And it was a real kick in the butt. I mean, I thought I was going to die right away. But that's not the case. And you know, it was time to really get to work against a new appointment, a new opponent. And I had a new normal that I was going to be dealing with. And I've been living with it ever since then.
And he's started a foundation, www.kirkgibsonfoundation.org. KirkGibsonFoundation.org. Gibby, you were Bo Jackson before there was a Bo Jackson. You were a wild stallion, you told us earlier. You were a Zeus, physical specimen. What's this latest fight taught you, Gibby?
You have to persevere, but you have to learn to do with less. And what I mean by that, Parkinson's disease affects your neurons. It kills the neurons in your brain. Your neurons produce something called dopamine. Dopamine helps you coordinate your movements. So my right side of my brain is more adversely affected than my left side, so it affects my left side. My right brain is compromised. The left side of my body is compromised. So you have to learn through therapy and through medicine to deal with this situation, and it's never ending, and it's exhausting. Through my foundation, I know how hard it is. I know how much of a shock it is. And through my foundation, I'm raising awareness to people. I see people. I identify people. I want them to not be embarrassed, because with Parkinson's disease, you do not want to admit it. And you don't know where to go. And that's what I'm here for, to make sure you do know where to go and to talk to you through it. You can do it. It's going to wear on you, but you've got my support. You got other support. There's many programs, and we continue to send people places, to the right places. And we continue to contribute money to other places for therapies. And we continue to be involved in clinical researches with different groups. There's so many foundations out there that are doing great work. I'm just here. I was always kind of the glue in my baseball team. I'm trying to be a glue in the Parkinson's community. You can count on me. Go to my website, Kirk Gibson Foundation. .org, and I'm there for you, just like it was on the diamond.
You're not just the glue, you're a battler, and you're an inspiration to all of us. Gibby, thanks for all you do. Keep up the great, great work, and best of luck this coming baseball season.
Thanks for having me, Jack. It's an honor. Thank you.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Prasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe.